Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown.
Welcome back to another episode of the Prospect Podcast. First time in a long time, I'm Ethan Piotta, joined by my co-host Alex Brown and special guest NBA draft writer for basketballnews.com, senior basketball ops analyst at Sports Info Solutions, Derek Murray. Derek and Alex, how's it going today? It's been a long time coming.
It's going well, man. I'm glad to finally record another podcast. Feels like it's been an eternity since the last one. But glad we could hop on with Derek today and looking forward to the combo.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. I feel like I haven't heard a podcast from this group in a while, so I'm excited to talk about it. With March Madness finally over, we finally reached a time where you can start kind of projecting, looking at mocks and stuff like that. So it's a good time. But so thank you for having me.
It was a crazy tournament too. When you really look at it, there was a lot of kind of just underdogs that advanced. We saw UCLA get to the Final Four, but it ultimately ended off with the two best teams playing off in the national championship. Baylor, Gonzaga, Baylor coming out on top. So obviously on this episode, we're really going to focus on the risers who really rose their draft stock from this tournament. Let's start right off with Baylor. Three guys that we want to talk about: Davion Mitchell, Jared Butler, and Matthew Myers. Start with Davion Mitchell, who is probably the biggest riser out of any, a 6'3 guard that has come on late. What are your guys' thoughts on Davion Mitchell being kind of regarded as almost a surefire top 20 or so prospect now?
Yeah, I've evaluated Davion pretty closely this year. When I really evaluated him for the first time, it was, I think, back in like probably early January, February. And I had him as like early second round at best, because I thought he was an energy guard that's going to come off the bench and, you know, hit some threes, give you some solid defense, and play make a little bit for you. And he's risen to my top 25 now. I don't think he's really a top 10 player just because, you know, he's going to be 23. I think he's more of a, you know, a linking bench guard that gives you, you know, initiation skills and tough defense. But historically, those guys have held up the best on the bench. So I don't really get the argument for taking him top 10 when there's so many other high upside picks. But I still like him quite a bit because he does have every tool you want. And, you know, that guy that's going to play that Fred VanVleet type of role in theory. What are your thoughts, Derek?
I think the reason you're seeing him rise so quickly is because a lot of the freshmen and the high ceiling guys at the top, their floors are terrifyingly low. So with Mitchell, it's more of a safe pick in a way, you know, just the guard version, the point guard version of why Kispert is getting lottery love. Like his ceiling's probably not that high, arguably over the course of the year. Like, I don't know how much better they can get than where they are right now. At least, you know, compared to these 18, 19 year olds that are going to enter the draft. So they don't have the highest ceiling. They feel safe because a lot of people look at Mitchell now and it's like, I know what I'm going to get, or I feel comfortable in projecting. I know what I'm going to get from him on both ends of the floor. Not necessarily he has the 10th highest upside in this class, or he has the 12th highest upside in this class. You know, again, very different players, but you have to look at the risk reward of Davion Mitchell versus a player like Kai Jones. And I pick Kai Jones, obviously very different position, but if Kai Jones clicks, you could have an awesome, awesome center, like Christian Wood type value on the floor. You know, maybe even better, like he's so skilled, but he has such a long way to go that if it doesn't work out, it could be a really, really low floor. You could get minimal value for a guy like Jones. And even if it does click, let's say it takes him a while, let's say it takes him his years 4 through 6 to really come into his own. If you draft him and you don't have a second contract, you might not even have him on your team. So the value for Mitchell is more, I know what I'm going to get. He's a surefire point guard in the league, at least, you know, to some extent, not necessarily that the ceiling is so high. So people who have him low or have him higher, I totally understand coming from all directions, but I think that's why you've seen him shoot up so far.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing with him is that the way he's been able to make this jump, I've always viewed him as a late first rounder. I think that's a great spot for him. Like Alex mentioned, perfect linking piece on a team. I think that's where he'd most flourish and maximize his value as. I think the biggest reason we're obviously seeing this is his increase in three-point shooting this year, 32% to 44%. Did pull-up shooting off the catch. Do you guys buy that as something that is going to be sustainable long-term for Davion Mitchell, or is that, you know, is that something that could have just been a fluke on an up year?
You know, historically, that numbers really haven't pointed to him being a great shooter, you know, at that 45% mark. You know, the free throws are, you know, a red flag for the most part. But I don't see why he can't be at least a high third, you know, mid to high 30s three-point shooter. I think that's a solid outcome for him, especially off the catch. You know, his pull-up game really started to blossom late in the season, because it was one of my biggest, like, swing factors for him when I first evaluated him is, can he make shots off the dribble? And with the efficiency that he was producing off of that in the latter part of the year, I think that's become really attractive to teams. But I don't think it's going to last at this level. I don't think he can sustain that percentage. I'd love him to, though, because he's so fun to watch on offense when he has that going. I think he was like 8 for 22 or something from deep in the tournament, something along those lines. So I think that's probably close to where you're going to see his percentages be during the during an NBA season.
Yeah, I don't ever want to try to predict a guy going 45% from three in the NBA. You know, it's tough enough to project somebody even going 40. But what I like about him is on his pull-up shots, how much space he is able to create for himself. And that is where I buy his pull-up shooting. You know, not that his release point is so high or anything like that. It's just, I mean, this kid's feet are so fast and he's so powerful left to right. Very quick twitch, which at his strength is really impressive. So I think he's just able to get defenders off balance and give himself the room to hit these shots, which I think will translate. So I don't want to translate the shooting itself, but I think that space he makes will be there.
Yeah, as far as getting to his spots, that's definitely something that's going to translate. And to add on to the strengths that you just mentioned regarding his pull-up shooting, another thing that stood out to me was just his balance. All the time, even when he's moving off step backs, off, you know, hang dribble pull-ups, he's always on balance. And when he is, he executes so much better. And when you have a guy that can get to the rim as easily as he can with the blow-by burst, tight handles, and space generation, you know, you have a guy that's going to be able to work offensively in the NBA. I have no doubt about that.
With that quick twitch athleticism as well, like Derek mentioned, comes, I mean, his defense, the perimeter defense is super fun to watch, to say the least. Just ball pressure, the way he's able to blow up sets was something that really caught my eye, especially in the national championship. I mean, it was ridiculous, the amount, the intensity that he was playing with out on the perimeter. So Davion Mitchell, we'll see where he ends up going. Another Baylor guard, though, Jared Butler, a guy that many thought might come out last year after a tremendous season, opted to come back for his junior year, struggled for a little bit heading up into the tournament, and then finished off super strong. What are you guys' thoughts on Butler in terms of his projected draft range and where you guys like him?
I think Jared Butler's probably, you're looking at a mid to late first right now, you know, depending on kind of what teams get intel-wise, physicals, stuff like that, you know, depending on what shows up. But purely as a basketball talent, I think he has the talent to go mid to late first. I saw him live a couple times this year and up at Oklahoma State in Stillwater. Every time he gathered, I just assumed the shot was going in. It didn't matter where he was on the floor. Like, as soon as the ball went to him, I was sitting there on the media, I said, okay, well, that's a three. Like, that's just money. When you get to that point, in my mind, like, I believe in your ability to score at the next level. And Butler hit that. You know, he is a little bit undersized, you know, if he plays the two. I think he can play minutes at the one at the NBA level. So I really like him. One of the smartest players in the class. But there will have to be, you know, a lot will be learned during the pre-draft process that could influence his stock. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I share your opinion about him. You know, seeing spot minutes at the one, but primarily is going to be an off guard or alongside another initiator, like ideally a jumbo initiator if in a perfect world, because he can gather so quickly off the ball, because his footwork is excellent off the ball, and his release is so quick, and he can get it off at a moment's notice with a guy in his face.
Yeah, he doesn't need any room, like at all. His release is so fast.
It's beautiful to watch. And like you said, man, every time you watch him, you think every shot's going in from deep. It just, it's beautiful, it's consistent, and it's very, very likely to translate. And then he has the ability to get to his spots with that handle. I mean, you have a very lethal scoring guard that you could probably, you know, take off the bench and really add some production. I don't know if he's – I don't think he's going to be a starter unless he ends up alongside another initiator where he can play that that global impact role without being, you know, your primary. That's a work for him at Baylor, was playing around multiple initiators. So I think teams should take that pretty seriously when looking at him.
Yeah, I'm not sold on him as a main primary kind of playmaker on a team. So like Alex is saying, alongside a jumbo initiator would be absolutely perfect for Butler. I too am just completely sold on his off-ball strengths in terms of just being able to spot up and take guys off the dribble. I still think he's a top three ball handler in the class. I'm just not completely sold on him being your primary playmaker. I'm not sold on that distribution aspect. But I mean, defensively as well, when you're talking about him, I have no concerns in terms of him being able to match up with other guards in the NBA. He rebounds well for his size as well. I think this is a guy that you're getting, you know what you're getting out of him when you draft him. And I wouldn't hesitate if I have a mid to late first round pick on a guy like Butler.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to help a team that's looking to get in the playoffs. That's pretty obvious. And I think those teams are going to be the ones that are going to take him and Davion.
Matthew Meyer is the last guy from Baylor that we are going to bring up. And he's kind of been an interesting riser, really still doesn't get a lot of mainstream attention, but obviously kind of he caught some eyes in the tournament in terms of just being able to score and spot up and do a number of different things on the court. Is he worthy of a second round flyer? Is he somebody that could sneak into the draft or potentially be an undrafted guy?
I am actually really curious to see what he decides to do, because among certain media members, there is a lot of love for him. From teams right now, not so much that I am hearing, but he has the size and the skill set of some NBA wings. Like he can score. He's a big kid, long, he's smooth, can handle the ball, good mechanics on a shot. Like he has what you want. What gets me is his inconsistency as a scorer. Now, I will give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. He played with three of the best scoring guards in the country, so he wasn't always asked to carry a lot of load just by the nature of their offense. So I don't want to like hold that against him, but even if you just look at his game logs, he'll go 18, 19, and the next couple of games he'll go 0, 2, 3, 3, 5. Then he'll go 17, 16, then he'll go 2 again. So again, a lot of that is the nature of their team, how powerful the offense was. He wasn't asked to carry a lot. I understand that. But in spurts, again, at his size, his skill set, like you can see that he's the kind of guy that could carve out a role or at least get some minutes.
Yeah, what do you think about his decision making? Because he is very irrationally confident, I would say, especially with his shot and picking his spots. Do you think another year at Baylor to sharpen up that decision making, play a little less? I don't want to go as far as say hero ball, but you know, play less as your number one scorer, more as just a supporting scoring wing. Yeah. You know, how do you think he can boost his stock if he returns?
There is a fine line between confidence and irrational confidence. And with shooters, sometimes I don't mind the irrational. I don't.
Me neither.
Over the course of the year, he did have a little bit more, like a couple more turnovers than I would have liked to see. And he did have some bad misses on some bad shots. But again, a guy with that kind of confidence, and he did shoot 40% from three. So like, I believe that he can do that. That's okay. Shot 59% from the free throw line. So that's a number that kind of sticks out to me. Not many attempts, only 1.6 per game, but he shot 59% from the line. If he comes back, he will be asked to carry a lot of weight on that offense, which I think could be good for him. Because at this point, you're kind of looking at we see the tools, But is he such a late riser that front offices are going to say, okay, well, there are other guys that you classify as toolsy that we'll bet on because we've seen them and been scouting them all year. So it would take a special situation for him to get drafted in the second round. I'd love to see him come back and really take control of that offense and be one of their leading scorers.
Yeah, totally share that opinion.
Yeah, I think it'd just be interesting to see him like without those three guards there as well, just to see what kind of, you know, weight he can carry as a playmaker and maybe in a bit of a reduced role in terms of maybe just, you know, the amount of shots that he thinks he's going to be able to get up. I always thought he sometimes like felt like he was watching someone play at LA Fitness because he didn't know how many touches he'd get in a game. I'm super interested though, you know, that extra year, especially being 6'9" and shooting 40% from three. I agree with Derek. He has a lot of qualities that you like to see in potential NBA wings. So could be a big offseason and next year for Matthew Meyer. Moving on, though, to the team that Baylor defeated in the national championship game. First off, Corey Kispert has really been a big riser all year. I mean, this is a guy that wasn't necessarily on draft boards last year, opted to come back for his senior season to Gonzaga, and has just made such – exponential strides in terms of, himself as a scorer, as a defender, I think even as a playmaker. There's just been, you know, a different level there for Corey Kispert this year. I always knew he was a knockdown shooter, but he took that to the next level as well this year, 44% on 6.5 attempts per game. Thoughts on Corey Kispert? He's got a wide range of, should he go lottery or is he more of a late first round guy, mid first round guy? What are you guys' thoughts on Corey Kispert?
I think Kispert's range is going to be very heavily dependent on the draft order. You know, I think last year we probably said that about anywhere from what, 4 to 11, 4 to 12. I think this year you're probably looking more 5 to 20. Like, I think the order is going to be so important because you have guys like Mitchell, Kispert, Duarte, these guys who are a little bit older that are more plug and play right now. And then you have freshmen that are kind of extreme projects. So Kispert's the kind of guy, you know, if you just look at Tankathon right now, based on how the board looks, you know, I think anywhere from maybe 12, 10 can be a little high depending on who goes up there. But I mean, 10 to 20 is probably the range if you had to pick one. I wouldn't see him falling too much farther than that because he has NBA size. You can play him right now. He can shoot from all over the floor. Comfortable with the ball and without the ball, which I think is very valuable. And he's a good decision maker. Like, even on defense, he's not going to blow you away with his defense, but he's in the right spot. He makes good rotations. He's active. So like, he's never becoming a liability. So I think if you have a team kind of in that playoff hunt who ends up in the middle of the first, maybe that 13 to 17 ish, maybe like 13 to 18 range, which again, right now, Tankathon, New York, Boston, Memphis, Atlanta, all pop up right there. Like, Kispert would fit in all of those situations. So if I had to guess right now, I think that's kind of where I see his stock going.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I think so many teams are going to be looking for a guy who can give you a little bit of on and off ball creation as a specialist shooter. And I think Corey fits that bill. He's going to be able to be a plug and play guy on any roster. And he's not going to give you, you know, something negative on defense, or at least significantly negative. I think he can fit in a scheme well. And that's what I liked about guys like, you know, Justinian Jessup last year. And I think Corey does almost everything better than Jessup. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how teams value that plug and play aspect with him. And if he can help a playoff team, because I think he's ready right now.
Man, that's an Alex Brown special right there. Justinian is absolutely tearing it up in the NBA.
Did I know?
In the NBL right now.
So he's been shooting well, chance. Right?
Yes, he's been playing. I, from what I've seen, he's been playing super well in the NBA. So NBL. So I'm hoping he gets a chance in the NBA relatively soon with the Warriors, which is I think just a great fit for him as well. Another guy from Gonzaga though that we want to touch on, Joel Yai. Just declared for the NBA draft after his junior season. I liked Yai a bit last year. But obviously I thought it was great that he returned. This might be a guy that you would hope would maybe take one more season as a senior to, you know, maybe even take an increased role in that Gonzaga offense. Obviously their team is going to be a powerhouse for years to come. So we'll see how that works, but Ayayi, is he worth a second round flyer? I think I love his positional size. I wanted to see him improve a little bit off ball as a three-point shooter with his creation. Maybe this year there wasn't, you know, much standout improvement, but I like what he can bring defensively with his size and getting to the rim. Could be definitely an interesting off rotational guard maybe in the future. Is he worthy of a second round pick this year though?
All due respect to Joel Ai, Justinian Jessup is averaging 15.1 points a game on 43.8% shooting from deep.
So, oh yeah, we love that.
I had to look that up real quick because I knew he was scoring well. I didn't realize it was that good right now.
It's great. Wow. We love that.
All right. Ai, 1.4 turnovers a game in 31 minutes. Like, he's just a good decision maker. He's got good ball handling. He's a good passer off the dribble, all over the floor. And he shot 39% from three this year. He just does all the little things right. And not only does he do the little things right, he's a 6'5" guard. So he's got good positional size. He's a smart kid. He's a winner. Like, he knows how to win. He knows what it takes to win. I don't ever see him because he's not going to be some NBA superstar, but I think he's a guy that can be in your rotation, can give you minutes, most likely at the two. I don't really see anyone, you know, he wasn't a huge distributor, but again, good decision maker. And I think there's a place for him. The range is interesting right now. Some of your, like some media will put him in the back end of the first round. You know, some people we've talked to, we'll take a flyer on him in the second. I think he's got a really wide range, but almost in a good way, where it's almost higher. It's wide on the front end and not the back end. So, you know, I think anywhere probably, I mean, 30 to 45, maybe, you know, 31 to 50, I think if I had to say it, but I think his skill set, decision-making, his pedigree, I think you're looking probably more on the higher mid side of that than the low end.
Yeah, I agree. And talk about a plug and play guy. I mean, that's an instant linking guard that can, you know, fill a role on any team. I think his ceiling is high enough that you definitely take him in the early second round if you can, because he does everything you want a role player, especially at the, you know, 1-2 spot. He may not give you a lot of initiator reps, but he's going to link your offense together, make good decisions, and not give up a whole lot. So I like him quite a bit.
So now moving on to another real catalyst of a Final Four team this year, Quentin Grimes of Houston had truly a breakout season for the Cougars and a historic season for their franchise as well. And you're really looking at Grimes with, I mean, obviously he's up there in his junior season, started off at Kansas. I believe was he number 8 in the RSCI coming in 2018, super highly regarded out of Kansas, change of scenery, goes to Houston, and now has a real chance, I think, to become an NBA player this year, should become an NBA player this year. Quentin Grimes, what are your guys' initial thoughts on him?
Grimes, to me, is a guy that I think this is his window of opportunity to go pro, so I'm glad he's taking it. You know, like you said, ranked 8th in the high school class in 2018, pretty underwhelming at Kansas. Went to Houston in 2019 and played well. He averaged 12, almost 4, and about 2.5 assists, but still couldn't quite make that elite jump, or that jump to being that elite player that you wanted to see. And then this year he shot very, very well, 40% from 3 on 8.5 attempts per game, 78% from the line, and 6 rebounds as well. So, like, he really finally came into his own. 6'5", 205, big, strong guard, like very, very strong and athletic. So this year, I think he really played himself. Yes, he rose in March Madness, but he also had the kind of season to where, let's say, even if Houston didn't play, or, you know, COVID happened, he wasn't able to play in the tournament, I still think we would be talking about him as a guy who would be taken seriously in the draft class, just because he has that pedigree, his background, McDonald's All-American. And he finally came into his own, which is really, really nice to see. So I think he's got a shot to go in the second.
Yeah, I'm with you there on his projection. He really did have a great NCAA tournament. I mean, he had 18 three-pointers, which is absurd. I mean, I think probably Buddy Boeheim was one of the only other guys that was close to that. He great shooter. I think we know what he can do at this point. I don't know where I'm comfortable projecting him as far as an NBA role. I think he's the guy that's going to shoot for you and play decent defense. But I think, you know, with his pedigree and that shooting stroke, probably worth taking a flyer on in mid to late second. But he's definitely got to use this year to get into an NBA system if he can.
Yeah, I think with the shooting alone, even if we never, I mean, I'm not anticipating any kind of, you know, creation or playmaking, you know, outburst that we'll see from Grimes going forward in the NBA. That's not something you're really banking on. Like you said, you know kind of what you're going to get in that second round. I think that's, I mean, potential to be a really high level 3-point shooter potentially in the NBA, especially on 8.5 attempts per game and some of the difficult shots that he was taking off the dribble, off the catch, you know, in certain sets for him. I think he could be, you know, potential dynamic bench shooter in the NBA at his highest role and maybe a slightly above average defender as well. So really fitting into a potential 3-and-D role would be the best possible outcome for Grimes. I think that's someone that you definitely should be comfortable and willing to take a second round flyer on, especially in this draft class where a lot of the top is banking on upside. I think this is kind of a surefire guy that, again, you know what you're going to get out of. So I'm in on him as a second rounder for sure. Moving on though to another guy, honestly, not similar career tracks, but there are some parallels. Johnny Juzang came into Kentucky last year as a notable recruit at the very least out of high school. Obviously needed to change of scenery, went to UCLA this year, broke out onto the scene, was a big reason to why the Bruins reached the Final Four this year. Juzang, is he someone that should take that extra year, that extra junior season to come back and better his game? Or is now the time for Juzang to come out into the draft?
I am of the opinion that Juzang, you never want to try to tell somebody what to do. Everybody's situation is different. But I think with the hype that he has created for himself now, if he were to go back to UCLA for another year, capitalize on that and really play well, he could play himself into a first round draft pick. He's a bona fide shooter. Even though he was 35% from three this year, he's a tough shot maker. And there are moments that he does scare me as a prospect because a lot of his tough shots came because he couldn't create a ton of space for himself. So one of the reasons I love Davion Mitchell is he could create all kinds of space for himself to get these open looks. Where Juzang, he hit the tough shots, but my concern is he didn't create any room for himself to work with. So I would love to see him develop, you know, the footwork, maybe a little bit more quick twitch, kind of get people off of him, off of his body, because a lot of his makes were heavily contested. So love him as a shooter. I think he's a legitimate prospect. I think in this year, if he were to stay in, he's probably an early to mid second round guy, but I'd really like to see him go back and work on that.
Yeah, I would like to see him go back as well. Just give you a more consistent advantage that doesn't rely on something as difficult as tough shot making. Because very seldom do guys that are tough shot makers that have maybe one or two other tools, seldom do those guys really end up being super high value guys, in my opinion. Just not somebody I'd always want to play. But if he's a shooter that can get to his spots, can create space, you know, play make a little bit more for others, you know, I'm definitely looking at him next year as a potential first round pick if he improves in those areas. But I think it's very difficult, like you said, to look at guys that rely on such shots to create their primary advantage. I think it's very difficult to see those guys translating early on to the NBA because defense is going to be so much different against them. And you don't want to run your offense through that. So how can he improve in a supporting role is what he should be focusing on at the next level. Well, if he takes his next year, which ironically is going to have a higher usage and play less of a supporting role. So it'll be interesting to watch with him. But I really hope he can take that step because I was high on him coming out of high school and I love shooters, especially wing shooters. So
from a fan perspective, I'd love to see him and Jaquez run it back. Because I love those two. Yeah. I love those two players together. So I'd love to see them. And I think they can be really good again.
I do as well. I think it's in his best interest. Again, you know, just from my perspective, I'm sure the situation is different than what we see it. But I'd love to see him go back and refine some of those supporting traits that are going to be imperative for him.
Yeah, this was awesome. I played against Juzang in high school, and this is exactly the kind of player that was really hyped out coming out of Harvard Westlake. And this is somebody that, you know, would make tough shots at that level, made tough shots at this level. I completely agree with you guys, though. in that supporting role, can he take any kind of athletic strides to better himself off the dribble to create more separation? Is there anything unlocked there that he can kind of, you know, move towards and show NBA teams next year? I think the best way that he can sell himself on as a first round pick in 2022 is just, you know, selling himself as a knockdown shooter, because his stroke is nice. It's fun to watch. I think the degree of difficulty they make shots, the shot variation, shot versatility, I think everything's there with Juzang. I'm in complete, you know, agreeance that I would hope to see him maybe take one more year back, but obviously, you know, the decision is with the prospect. I just think, you know, this is a guy that we can for sure be counting on as a first round pick, and maybe even in a better situation than he potentially land in 2022 if he's able to take that extra year. Moving on, though, to another guy who has kind of been up and down in a way and had, I think, a really good Big 12 and NCAA tournament showing, and that's Deuce McBride from West Virginia. Not a lot needs to be said about his defensive intensity. Those matchups with Cade Cunningham this year in the Big 12 were certainly extremely fun to watch. Those two guys kind of going back and forth, and Deuce gave it to him a few times, especially just picking him up with his ball pressure. I was extremely impressed with him as a three-point shooter this year. I think he looks a lot more confident, a lot more sure in himself. His base has improved a lot. I'm a fan of Deuce, especially in kind of almost that late first round, early second round range. What are your guys' thoughts on McBride?
Yeah, McBride, I think, really did himself well in the tournament, even though they only won one game. You know, they got knocked out by Syracuse in the second round, but against Morehead State in that first round, he had 30 points, 6 boards, 6 assists, and 3 steals, and I thought he played incredibly well. Like, everything he does at a high level, he flashed and put on display in that game. His defense on ball and off the ball, his ability to completely disrupt your offense on the perimeter, his three-point shooting was awesome. To your point, he went 41% from 3 this year on, I think, 3.5 a game. Just really impressed me as a prospect. There are some questions from NBA circles as – what position is he going to play? How do I use him in my offense? Because he's not a point guard. He's an undersized 2 guard. You know, it's kind of similar to the Maxey conversation last year, where you got to kind of find a unique role for him because of the limitations, but he's still like a really good basketball player. So you kind of want him. You just have to get creative. So I think that's why you'll see him. He could be at the back end of the first round. I don't know how high his ceiling is compared to, again, some of these other young projects, just because of his lack of size, but he's a really, really intelligent player, high IQ, high energy all the time. He provides impact on both sides. So he's a guy that I think you want on your team.
Yeah, 100%, man. And if he can get, you know, alongside another initiator that can, you know, pick up, you know, either on the wing defense or, you know, on that off guard spot, I think he could provide a lot of value. But if you don't land him in one of those situations, you're going to really have to get creative. I think that's something worth noting, because he definitely has the tools. He has, now he has more shooting. He has the IQ, the intensity, the motor, the athleticism, the creation package as far as self-creation. So from a tools standpoint, he's awesome. But looking at where he's going to play, that's going to be a little bit more of an issue. And I think that's the only reason he drops. You know, if he was 6'4", 6'5", he'd be like, I mean, top 10 pick, I think, if he had that ceiling. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So very, very interested to see how teams use him and what type of role they end up putting him in. Because he went at guys like Cunningham. You know, he showed the willingness to defend wings and battle on that end. Yeah. So he's not going to be.
He made life really difficult for a lot of the elite guards in the Big 12.
Exactly. And those guys are always going to have a place somewhere. It just may not be, context is not going to be irrelevant for him. That's just worth noting. So definitely take a good, strong look at what teams could find an interesting role for him if you're going to project him for this upcoming draft, because you're going to have a special type of roster for him to really work. But love his tools.
Absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see if he's able to get into that right situation, because if you are able to hit on somebody like that with his tools, maturity, motor, like you said as well, especially on the defensive end, and now, you know, increased spot up shooting, I mean, it's going to be, that could be a big win for a team in the long run. Moving on though to another guy, unsure if he'll come out or not at this moment, but a big reason to why USC actually got to the Elite Eight this year, Isaiah Mobley, brother of projected top five pick Evan Mobley. And Isaiah caught some eyes this year. I think me and Alex both kind of mentioned that we were maybe out on him at the beginning of the year. I don't know where Alex stands now. I think, you know, just watching him as a shooter, you know, progress and some of his, you know, ball handling and playmaking flashes that he was able to really, you know, carry USC with throughout that tournament. I think he deserves some type of consideration, at least in the second round this year, especially being 6'10 with his body. And I think just basketball intelligence as well. It's one thing that really caught my eye. Always seems to be making the right play. Decision-making is good, especially on defense, able to, you know, not the quickest guy, not the best build to, you know, be versatile, but was in the right spot and wasn't necessarily a negative for that team. And maybe some of that was minimized by kind of USC's scheme and their zone that they'd often go to. But Isaiah Mobley, is he someone that is worthy of a potential second round look after his tournament run?
I think if he were to declare, I do think he's worth a shot in the second round. I mean, 6'2", 235. Just a huge physical, or sorry, 6'10", 235, my bad. Just a big physical kid, really good rebounder, and he doesn't have the best feet. He's not lightning quick, you know, in any capacity, but he's so smart. He is highly intelligent on both ends. He's willing to get physical, and this year he really showed that he could shoot the ball, 43% from deep. You know, the one discussion is the volume really wasn't there. It wasn't great volume. You know, I'm hesitant often to buy shots on guys with really low 3-point volume. I think he was maybe 40, 50 on the year. But he hit him off the dribble in the tournament. He hit him in big moments. So I could see him getting drafted if he stays in. He'll be a really interesting guy to watch kind of coming down this pre-draft process.
Yeah. He was 17 of 39, from 3-point land, overall on the year, but the free throw percentage is again, a little worrying for me, shooting it at just 54%. With the struggles last year combined with low volume from deep, it's just a little worrying for me right now. I think he could raise his stock the most going back, showing that shot is legit, continuing to make plays as that highly intelligent four or five hub guy. Because he does make great decisions with the ball in his hand, and he really played with Evan really well. So I think if he can come back, take the spotlight, really show those skills that he's flashed, I think he could, you know, be a guy that could provide second round value perhaps next year, but I'd be a little hesitant to buy it yet.
Definitely gonna be interested to see what Mobley chooses to do. Last guy that we want to get to, Namias Keita from Utah State. I feel like this is somebody I haven't been super in tune with, like what people have, you know, their thoughts on certain guys this year, but this is someone that I feel like has kind of almost slipped off the radar almost entirely from some circles. Obviously you guys would probably know better than me, but I've, you know, against Texas Tech in that tournament game, I believe he had 11, 13, and the biggest one was 6 assists for me in that game against Texas Tech in their first round tournament loss. Namias Keita also 3.5 blocks per game this year, big 7-footer, still not showing any kind of signs as a stretch, but I was impressed at times this year in games I watched of Utah State of his ability to be more versatile than he's given credit for on that defensive side. And obviously his shot blocking is an elite tool with his wingspan and his height.
I like him as a late second rounder, potentially, you know, somewhere in that 45 to undrafted range, you know, depending on, you know, some injury history stuff. But again, 7 foot, 245 from Portugal, and 3 years in a row, he raised his free throw percentage and got better, much, much better as a passer and had more assists each season. So in that game against Texas Tech, he had 11 points, 13 boards, 6 assists, and 7 blocks. Just a nightmare to try to score on, knows how to stay vertical, powerful lower body. You just have to worry a little bit about the injury history. You know, can his lower body hold up? But honestly, I like the kid as a backup center. I think he can get some minutes. It'll be interesting to see kind of what value he brings the back end of the second, because even if he goes undrafted, I still think he's a guy you kind of want to bring into your organization and give him a shot.
Yeah, and look at how the league valued Udoka Azubuike last year. I mean, dude ended up being a first-round pick, not near the same value as a play finisher. So that's really kind of, I think, the biggest area of upside for Keta, especially with his, you know, his athletic ability, if that injury history proves to be, you know, not as worrying as it could be. I think that's worth looking into as far as bringing him up as a backup center, because he protects the rim really well, and he's athletic. I mean, he's athletic enough to be an NBA player, and you look at him, and he looks like an NBA player too. So he really passes the eye test as a guy that could potentially fill a role. If injuries or, you know, maturity don't work out for him, I'm sure he has a great career overseas, but I think he's going to spend time here looking for that NBA role, probably going to do G League time, but I think he should capitalize, come out this year, and get into a system.
Yeah. As mentioned, I think we've talked about it on this show before, that third center role in the NBA is an underrated and kind of an important position on a 15-man roster. I think we've seen it in numerous situations that player, I think, you know, Keita could be someone that could fill that void potentially even from, you know, year one or year two based on his development and injury history, like we mentioned, if he is drafted. So me and Keita are going to be interested to see what happens with him. That's all we have for potential risers that we saw throughout March Madness. Derek, first and foremost, we appreciate, as always, you coming onto the show, first one in a while. Everyone, please check him out on Twitter at DMurrayNBA, doing just great things. You can tell by his lengthy title in the intro as well, kind of what we're dealing with now, and it's much deserved for the hard worker that Derek is. So, Derek, again, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, and thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Yeah, always enjoy it, man.
As for me and Alex, we're going to hope to put out, I think, a lot more episodes now coming into the home stretch of the draft, coming up soon here. And so, I, you know, it's been long overdue, but getting back on this will be great. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave it a like, subscribe, positive review. We're all over Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else. You can follow us on Twitter at The Prospect Pod. Follow Alex on Twitter at AHB Analytics, and follow me on Twitter at Ethan Piotta. Thanks a lot, guys, for joining, and we'll see you next time.